Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
I know what you're thinking. Did he gut 5 films or 6? You got to ask yourself this question. Do you feel lucky? Well, do you, punk? Hey, Herd, Kevin Goatee here, gutting the sacred cow. Well, we've now turned to a new chapter in our show. This is the first episode where Kevin Israel is no longer with us. If you remember from our last episode, he has sailed off into the sunset and wished him the best of luck. So from now on, we have our guest host, and now our guest host begins with, you know him, you love him, show fan and friend, Bill Schultz joins us as Nick Whitmer, first time on the show, joins us to take down one of the most iconic baseball films ever, The Natural. Before we get to it, guttingthesacredcow at gmail.com to advertise with us, and of course, guttingthesacredcow.com to grab a shirt, hat, mug, bag, whatever. All that good stuff. And now let's see how Bill Schultz does in the co-host chair with Nick Whitmer doing The Natural.
Gather round, here's what I know. It's just that this cow has got to go. I know some people kind of like it, yeah.
Out of order? I'll show you out of order. You don't know what out of order is, Mr. Trask. I'd show you, but I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'm too fucking blind. If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place. Bill Schultz, guest co-host tonight. Name that film.
The Scent of a Woman?
Attaboy.
All right.
Congratulations, Kevin Goatee.
I was just describing your cologne.
Hey-o. See, out of the gate, he's got jokes. Kevin Goatee, Bill Schultz, guest hosting, and Nick Whitmer, my buddy, comedy friend, all that good stuff, gambling extraordinaire partner. Nick, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm great, man. Just living this stay-at-home dad life, you know?
Attaboy.
Oh, jealous.
Nick has a brand new stand-up album. He would like to tell you about.
I
Nick,
do.
Tell everybody where we can find it, what it is.
It came out Friday. You can find it on Amazon Music, on iTunes, and all those places. Not on Spotify anymore, because apparently Spotify is being a dick to a bunch of artists. So not on Spotify, but don't worry about it. You don't need to. You can get it anywhere else. It's called Always Hungry. Also, the video special will be out in July. So if you follow me on Instagram, you can get all the updates on stuff. Also, there's a link in my Instagram bio that has a link to get the album. So it's all right there. It's my debut stand-up album, and I'm pretty proud of it. So you should get it.
Listen, I already paid for the iTunes. I'm not paying for a video. That's enough is enough. All right.
Well, the video is going to be free later on. So don't worry about that.
I'm glad to. Nick Whitmer joins us, and it's been a while since on this fine podcast, and thank you for listening to us every week, giving us a time, an hour of your week every week, and telling your friends and family. Nick's chosen a sports film, and not many sports films have been done on this podcast, I think because they know where we stand on some of them. Nick Whitmer, though, has chosen probably one of the most iconic baseball films, The Natural. 1984, a box office budget at the time of $28 million, a box office haul of $48 million. Turn that into 2021 money. $77 million budget, $132.1 million profit. IMDb, as we all know, is a scale 1 through 10 with decimal points. Nick, what do you think The Natural scored?
Probably 7.3, 7.4.
Well, listen, you're half pregnant, you're pregnant or you're not. Which is it, 7.3 or 7.4 or another number?
Let's go 3.
7.3. Bill Schultz.
I'm going to go a solid 8.
One of you has just won both showcases. Nick Widmer with 7.4.
Never get those.
Feel
cheating.
Feel free to put your hand in my
pick 7.4. Well, I won still.
But. Well, you feel free to put your hand in my pocket and get $500 out of my pocket, and I'll spank you with my long ass microphone. A Rotten Tomatoes score, if you will, Bill Schultz. Critics 1 through 100, as you very well know. Critics score of The Natural. Hit me, baby, one more time.
75.
Nick Widmer.
I'm going to say that, like, if you're a movie critic, there's no way you didn't see what I saw. And I'm thinking you probably, like, hated it as much as I did. So I'm going to say 66.
83.
Really?
Nick, starting with you, what do you think the audience gave The Natural?
Oh, see, this is like every fucking 5-year-old boy saw this movie and loved it. And then they think it's still a good movie when they're an adult. So probably like 92.
Bill Schultz.
Oh, boy. All right. I'm going to say 91 because I like winning and it gives me a big wide berth.
Why don't you, can you do me a favor, can you put that cigarette in your missing tooth and just let it sit there? And that way you have to keep going back and forth.
You promised me there would be enough CGI to cover up the tooth thing. Put the white in this before you broadcast it.
I appreciate you and your never-ending devotion to the craft for your audition for Timmy the Tooth, but this is a whole new level. Bill Schultz.
I'm dressed period style.
I'll let that one slide. I'm getting QQ again. What, Bill, you said 91. Nick, what was your number?
93. I probably should have went too high. I probably went way too high, but
88.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Quotes, the best there is, the best there was, the best I ever will be. Next one. The ball is as dry as your granddaddy's scalp. By the way, a lot of these sayings could easily pass for Dr. Seuss lines. Something they could just, you could put like a bunch of words, mix them together, and they all make about as much sense as shit like that. Like, that woman makes about as much sense as a pitcher of lemonade on a choo-choo track. Like, these 20s and 30s times. Not a fan.
It was a different time.
And Bill, this one up your alley. Losing is as contagious as syphilis.
I feel like I won by getting syphilis because it means I just fuck a lot.
I was talking about the White Sox, but fair enough.
Oh, all right.
Any quotes jump out at you, fair guest, Nick Widmer?
Man, that every time that dude was talking to a girl, he's like, I want people to look at me and say, oh, that's Roy Hobbs, the best there ever was, all the time. He's like, that was his line with all these women that apparently he got shot by and didn't bang. Except the one time when he did, but we didn't see it. And then he's had a kid. I don't know.
Spoiler.
Sounds pretty terrible to me, but.
Hey-o. Bill Schultz, any quotes from you?
The one that always resonated with me was, some mistakes you never stop paying for. And that really cuts like a knife. I think the most problematic one is when he's answering a young fan as to how you make it in the big leagues. And he says, you have to have a lot of little boy in you, which was, I felt problematic. But, and then finally, this is a very anti-media movie. The subtexts are, and when he, and this is every athlete, failed or otherwise, lived by this one, where he talks to Robert Duvall and says, and asks him, did you ever play baseball? And of course, Duvall says, no. Nope. And he goes, I thought so. And yeah, there's a big market for people being happy about that one.
You hear that, Tim Kirkchin? By the way, that first quote for Bill stood out for a certain old fling.
There's more where she came from.
I know. The one that you always discuss with me. Okay.
Yes. She has very Basinger qualities, that one.
Five fun facts. Five fun facts for you right now. It's time for five fun more facts. Five fun facts for you right now. The bat that Bat Boy Bobby Savoy gives Roy is called the Savoy Special. The Savoy Special was a brand of beer in the 30s and was made by the United States Brewing Company. That bat is now part of the collection at the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown. I must have skipped right past that, along with Roy Hobbs' jacket and an exhibit titled Baseball and the Movies.
Interesting. I would add that even though he supposedly hit his winning home run with the Savoy Special, Robert Redford insisted on actually doing it with Wonder Boy, which of course in reality wasn't actually smashed in the movie. So that hit was done by Wonder Boy.
Hobbs, number two, breaking the scoreboard.
No one cares.
It was cute.
It's not like he really hit a home run. It was in the script. Like, he probably hit a liner that they made it look like it was a home run. So if he really hit a home run, I might be a little impressed, but there's no way he.
Yeah, no. Why do you hate America? Why do you hate America, Nick?
If Patriot... Why does he get to have that? Why does he get to have this?
Wait, like, oh, dude, wait, I use my. Wait, you... wait,
sorry.
Wait. Yeah. Listen, if Pedro Serrano can do it in fucking real time for the Indians in Major League, why can't Robert Redford? Hobbs breaking the scoreboard clock with a home run was inspired by Bam Roll of the Boston Braves doubling off Ebbets Field's scoreboard clock on May 30th, 1946, showering Dixie Walker with glass, though being promised a free watch by Bulova for hitting the company's scoreboard sign. Rowell had to wait until 1987 to get his watch.
Cheap bastards.
Number three, and this makes perfect sense. Pro wrestler Bret Hart took the catchphrase, the best there is, the best there was, and the best ever will be from this film. Oh. We'll call this the natural screw job.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
In the continuing, these motherfuckers have too much time, 2001, Bill Simmons, ESPN Magazine, compiled Roy Hobbs' rookie season stats, taking cues from the movie. Boy, it's amazing that someone can get vagina with this kind of dedication. His line,
no kidding.
His line would have looked something like this: 115 games played, 400 at bats, 92 runs, 140 hits, 44 homers, 106 RBIs, 350 batting average, striking out 85 times and walking 75.
That's still very Frank Thomas in his heyday.
Mm-hmm. Without the no steroids.
By the way, we all know Frank Thomas did not touch steroids, thank you very much, in an era where everyone else did. He was born looking like a linebacker.
He's too busy taking testosterone pills the whole time.
Yeah.
Your wife will love it.
I didn't have to say it because I knew that 2-0 fastball was right perfectly placed.
Nugenics.
Number five.
That's Hobbs, what it was, Nugenics.
Hobbs contract, $500. With the Knights equates to $9,700 in 2021, making less than someone in Mexican ball.
True.
And those are the five fun facts. I know Bill Schultz, researcher extraordinaire, loves to dig up shit, even though I tell him not to. Do you have anything out there that you want to get out in the fun facts category?
Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. I'll give you guys a quiz question real quick. It's
sure.
A quick one. All right. Who else, like Roy Hobbs, ended his career with a game-winning home run and wore number 9?
I was going to say Kirk Gibson, but that's not right.
I know Roger Maris wore 9. Is it Maris?
He retired many years later.
Ladies and gentlemen, you want to go keep it? You go ahead.
That's only I can guess. It was Kirk Gibson 9.
Not only was it Ted Williams, but
that's right. Robert, I knew that. God damn it.
Robert Redford modeled his swing after Ted Williams. And Ted Williams also used to say, all he wants to be able to be known by is, there goes Ted Williams, the greatest hitter that ever lived.
I fucking knew that. Why did you say that?
Like, they act like that's a humble thing. All I want to be known as is the best thing ever to exist. That's all. I'm not asking for much. Just worship me like a god.
That's very Ted Williams, though. Yeah.
I mean, his head has been cut off and frozen in carbonite or whatever the hell he is. Cryogenics.
Next to Walt Disney.
Yeah. Just so you can get the DNA do that. And now, everybody, it's time for our favorite subject, everyone's new time to ask a...
Ask a gutter, ask a gutter,
Ask a Gutter. Ask a Gutter. At Eric 4953, question for you. The Natural is a classic timepiece. One of the best baseball movies ever. Second choice, he said, is For Love of the Game. So what is the best baseball movie? And he says, parentheses, don't say Field of Dreams, that snorefest.
Well, Field of Dreams is great and way better than The Natural. I mean, to be fair, I think Mr. 3000 is better than The Natural, but that's not
good
because it's a good movie. It's just because The Natural is so terrible. I think Bull Durham Bull Durham is my favorite baseball movie. It's definitely one of the best. I think the first Major League is up there too. I think For Love of the Game has some of the best baseball in movies with, first of all, Kevin Costner was throwing gas. Like he was actually throwing like 85, but there's the love story that goes along with it that people didn't really enjoy and everything. But the baseball with Vin Scully commentating, like the actual baseball in For Love of the Game was brilliant. It was awesome. Mm-hmm.
Very anti-Yankee, that film.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you gotta be,
No, you don't.
All the time you gotta be. All the time you gotta be.
Eat a dick, Alex Fernandez.
I would say the three that I enjoy going back to the most are Bull Durham, For Love of the Game, Field of Dreams, and Major League.
No one said Naked Gun in there, I saw. Okay. Just kidding. Bill, give me
Moneyball's good too, actually. I always forget about Moneyball.
Yeah, you know why? I'll tell you why you should forget about fucking Moneyball, because they didn't report on the most important factor of that film. What is that? Bill Schultz, do you know the answer why I hate this film, Moneyball?
Jonah Hill was played by five people, but he was fat enough to do that. Or no, he was playing.
Because they forgot to omit one little fact. The A's were not successful because they got a bunch of guys who could walk and get on base. They won all those games because they had 1, 2, 3, 4 starting fucking pitchers who won 20 games each. Hudson, Mulder, Zito, and I forgot the other one. Four starting pitchers,
that was a pretty,
four beasts. Yeah. And they didn't say one word on how great they are. They made it sound like David Justice and Scott Hatterberg and all these other dildos were the reason they were able to cobble that win streak together and then get picked off by the Yankees in 2001. Thank you very much. I was there.
They also forgot to mention Jeremy Giambi's Coke connection. I mean, that Coke had to be the best Coke.
I like Brad Pitt, but that is such an egregious oversight. I can't put in there.
That is an excellent point. I was more of a fan of the Michael Lewis book than the movie, I guess. But yeah, when you have four beasts like that, you have a pretty good chance, even with a terrible lineup.
It's 80 games. It's 80 games. Christ. I have to say Major League. I also have to say Field of Dreams. I don't give a shit with anybody. That's goddamn classic.
That's a great movie.
And I can argue, and I know Bill Schultz is going to fucking blow a load. 8 Men Out has to be part of the conversation, at least top five.
That was
61.
One of mine.
61.
61's great. I'll get to I did my 60, top 10 later on.
61. I hate the Yankees, as Kev well knows.
61's great.
61 is one of my all-timers. Absolutely. Yeah.
I have to put that on there, too.
And I like For Love of the Game.
By the way, what amazing casting in 61. What's his name that played Mantle? Perfect.
Thomas Jane. He's great.
Thomas Jane and Barry Pepper.
Barry Pepper is Roger Maris in both looks, everything. Oh, it was unbelievable. Love 61.
Great.
And they filmed in Tiger Stadium, old Tiger Stadium. And the CGI was just good enough at the time where they added all the stuff to really make it look like old Yankee Stadium. It was awesome. It was so good.
At Lord Snurts, haven't seen The Natural, so no questions. Okay, thank you very much. At Eric 493.
Almost makes us wonder why you included that one, Kev.
Yeah. I read them all. And of course, at Eric 4953, Bill Schultz and Joey Nosinski co-hosting these episodes. Such a treat for your listeners. You're goddamn right.
Joe did that under an assumed name, I think. She wrote that one.
question from our buddy Rex Crum. For Nick, Hobbs was a 48-year-old rookie who somehow pulled in prime Ken Basinger. How would Roy fare with the sports groupies of 2022?
Great question.
Well, Redford's got that like old man charm. Like it's, I think he would do pretty well considering. Well, now, so it's a different climate now. You know what I mean? It's like, what's okay, what's not okay. Makes me think like the old white dude in the back is probably what the women will stay away from. So I'm actually thinking now that I think about it more that he's probably striking out, no pun intended, with a lot of these broads in present day.
Oh, well, the other thing, too, is he really lucked out. First of all, let's remember Robert Redford was actually narcissist that he is, even though he was 47. He was playing a 35-year-old.
Right.
Even though he looked like his mitt. Skin wise, but as far as his actual bat that was attached to him was so wonderful that after knocking up Glenn Close, not only did she go in for child support, she never even bothered to tell him that he had a kid, so much as to even distract him from raising the little runt, much less paying for him. You think that would have happened now? You think that would have happened with any NBA groupie now who are all in it to get pregnant for the cash? Roy was in the right era at the right time as far as not wearing a condom.
There's Roy Hobbs, and then on the other side of the spectrum, there's Sean Kemp.
Ooh.
At least, what is it, 20 kids?
And Antonio, like and Antonio Cromartie.
Yeah, I couldn't even remember his kids' names.
Let's go have a goddamn snack. By far the best Hard Knocks season ever.
Oh, yeah. They should have ended it after that season.
How do you not hate Rex Ryan? I love Rex Ryan for that.
But
the Jet fans are still, you know. All right. And now, Bill Schultz, it's time to let Nick Cage out. Nick Cage, that's not you.
Cage. That'd be a hell of a booking.
You just shake your hands like
Nick Cage just. Let's go. Yeah.
I see.
Man, that'd be great.
Wouldn't that be great?
I would bow out to see Nick Cage shit on The Natural. I would totally be like, you know what?
Oh, no. Man. Anytime someone refers to you as Nick Cage, just be like, that's high praise.
Yeah.
That is high praise.
Carla was the prom queen. I knew one of you would get that one. All right, let's let Nick Whitmer come out here, Bill Schultz, and gut the sacred cow.
This movie is fucking trash. It's filled with it's filled with fucking unearned moments and fucking terrible character development. Like, I'll start with those are the biggest egregious, but I'm gonna start like with the smaller gripes, I guess. What was the licensing agreement that they had with Major League Baseball where they were allowed to use the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Philadelphia Phillies, and the Chicago Cubs, their brands, their names, their likenesses, but they were had to be the New York Knights, and then they had to refer to Babe Ruth as the Whammer? Like, you couldn't – what weird thing is this? And then at the beginning of this movie, the Whammer is like Babe Ruth the entire time, but everybody knows it's Babe Ruth, but they can't call him that, and they keep calling him the Whammer, just grown men calling him with this weird nickname. And then he goes to this carnival and he gets struck out by an elite pitching prospect. Oh, wait, he's actually a right fielder. But the whole beginning of the movie, you're thinking this guy's a fucking pitcher. Anyway, it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And then later in the movie, he goes to pitch at BP. And then he fucking is a good pitcher again. And they're never like, you should pitch too. No, it's the dumbest thing. What's the fascination with the baseball doing insane shit in this movie? Like between the fucking clock tower scene and the lights and then it getting stuck in a net and then hitting the press box. It's like, what child was like, every time the ball gets hit, it's got to blow up something? Like, he's just doing damage to every stadium he's in. It's the most unbelievable shit I've ever seen. Going with the character development, this is the biggest flaw of the movie, is that literally this movie made me feel nothing the entire time. Nobody, no characters are developed, no moments were earned. The first one's the dad. The dad is like in two very quick scenes saying, you're going to be a great kid. And then he dies. And then it's supposed to be like a powerful moment and the lightning strikes the tree. Dude, give me 5 minutes with the dad. Let me know the dad a little bit before you kill him. Doesn't do anything for me. Glenn Close is the same way. He goes off to Glenn Close. They're dancing in a field at night, talking about how much they love each other and how much they want to get married. And then 5 minutes later, he's in a train trying to fuck this other woman. And then we're led to believe that he knocked her up that night. Like, they didn't show anything. There was nothing about that that made you actually think that they were intimate. It was just this weird relationship that like meant nothing to anybody. The teammates on the team, other than Michael Madsen, who is the most laughable athlete you could possibly cast as an actor, Michael Madsen as a professional baseball player, are you out of your fucking mind? Anyway, Michael Madsen is the only character, the only teammate that you even know the guy's name. The rest are these just guys who are never talk. And if they do talk, it's like, oh, you're really good there, Roy. And then they step into nothingness. So like the camaraderie at the end when he's in the hospital and all his teammates are surrounding him, it's like, dude, I don't know any of their names. I don't care at all about any of these people. Like you can't, it's like the laziest writing and the laziest movie I've ever seen.
That's
and
then so going with Michael true. Madsen, I didn't think of that. You don't hear one character's name. I could tell you damn near the entire starting nine of the Cleveland Indians in Major League.
Yeah.
But one of these motherfuckers, right. I know, you're right. I know two names. That's it. Oh, and the manager.
Yeah, and that. And then the guy at the end is like the pitcher who's allegedly throwing the game or whatever.
Right. But
he's only in one scene before that where he's dancing with the girl that he's like, I didn't even know there was a baseball player until he was pitching. And I was like, oh, I guess that's his teammate that I'm learning right now in the last most pivotal game. It's like the most ridiculous character development. And then the drama, they like purposely make it less dramatic, like the whole bump thing. They kill off Bump in the worst way ever. He fucking catches a ball and runs through a piece of plywood and then instantly dies on impact. Are you fucking kidding me? Like that's the only drama in that dugout is literally Bump versus Hobbs. It's like they could have wrote this thing that was like he lost his position to Hobbs, and then when Hobbs got hurt, Bump had to come back in, and he decided he wasn't going to take money from the team to throw the. And you know what I mean? There could have been drama there, but the only person threatening Hobbs at his position, they literally killed off in the laziest way of all time. There's more. And then the fucking montages. Holy shit, the montages. I get you do a one, maybe two montages. When they're good, there's a montage. When they're bad, there's a montage. When they're good again, there's another montage. And then Roy Hobbs' whole character is shrouded in this weird secrecy of like, what has he been doing for the last 16 years? He's not answering anybody's questions. Well, the one scene where he's with Glenn Close and he's actually telling her about this, they turn that into a montage mm-hmm. where it's like jump cuts of them walking in Chicago and then weird like ADR fucking lines that are filling in gaps. And it's like, this is the most impersonal movie. I don't care at all about Roy Hobbs. Like, I don't even give a shit that it, like 16 years to recover from a gunshot wound. That's like the biggest question I have. And they don't even bother trying to answer it. And I like Robert Redford. I do. But I think this is one of his worst performances because the entire time he was just deadpan as an actor. He was just delivering his lines like, yeah, well, you'll see next time. I wouldn't bet against me. Like there's nothing, there was no emotion in his face. You couldn't tell that he cared about Glenn Close in any way at all. Like there's just nothing about it that really, I didn't believe it at all. And then the drama between Pop and the Judge, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about the majority ownership of the team. Other than the money of that, the reason why that they say in the movie that Judge is trying to get rid of Pop is, do you guys remember?
He's a minor league owner of the team to 10% of that.
Yeah, right. He doesn't want to pay out the ownership, but he said, I want to get rid of him because what was his reasoning other than that whole money thing? It was because everybody knows Pop's a jinx.
Oh, yeah.
What? That's your motivation? Why did you hire him? He's a jinx. Just like, what do you like? I just thought it was just corny to me. Going through these notes. Sorry. Yeah. And then at the end, this is the more unearned moments, completely unearned moments. They pass him the card at the end of the movie when he's in the dugout that says, hey, I brought my son here. And by the way, it's your kid. They haven't even showed the kid on screen yet. And I'm supposed to give a shit that he has a kid, even though it was so obvious when she told him that he had a kid in New York. She had a son who, and her dad lives in New York, that it was him. It was the most obvious thing. I don't even know if they were trying to hide that or not. So I'm not going to criticize them for that. But the fact that Robert Redford like looks at this note and it's like, oh, you have a son and he's here today. And we haven't even seen him as an audience. And you don't see him until the fucking end. And he's got this fucking slow kid bowl cut and he's catching a ball in a field. It's like, no wonder she kept him away from him. Jesus Christ. The bat breaking, Wonder Boy breaking. No drama at all with that because they show you the bat at the beginning and they never really tell you how much the bat means to Roy. You just know that he made the bat himself, and then it breaks and it's just like, oh, his bat broke. But we hadn't talked about the bat in 75 minutes of movie, so like I don't give a shit that his bat broke. And then it also completely devalues the bat when the very next bat he used that was made by some fat bat ball boy, he hit a home run with that one. So like, it clearly was never the bat anyway. The poisoning thing at the hospital, the fully intact bullet that they found in his belly. And then they're like, if you ever play baseball again, your stomach will explode. What diagnosis is that? Have anybody ever heard of an exploding stomach?
When you give diet soda and Mentos to pigeons.
That's really it. So like, I don't understand like why that's a thing. And then he starts to bleed. Like, that's less believable than Kurt Schilling's bloody stock. You know what I mean? It's like, like, what is it? What is his stomach bleeding? Like, what is bleeding right now? Like, what is it that's bleeding? Not to mention he hits one light with a ball and then all of the lights blow up. I'm like, I don't know how did anybody watch this movie? Like, this movie is the 10th best sports movie all time by IMDb. Bill Simmons said, if you're making a sports movie list, if you don't have Hoosiers or The Natural at number one, I won't take it seriously. Where does the respect for this movie come from? This movie is like like I said, you had to have watched it when you were an 8-year-old boy who just loved fucking home runs and loved no drama. And then you just like it still because you watched it when you're a boy. But if you ever revisit this movie with any type of critical eye, like, it's just filled with so many terrible flaws that make you just go, I don't know or like any of these characters. Why am I even watching this fucking movie?
Bill is like he's watching a traffic accident unfold in front of his very eyes in slow-mo, the look on his face.
Forget about that Redford quote about regrets. This is cutting like a knife. This is cutting like a knife.
Is that it, Nick, or you have more?
I might have more. I just have notes, but I feel like I finished the rant, so I don't want to try to find
If you're a good rant.
It's
hard to argue.
Give me a number 1 to 10.
In terms of what I think the movie is?
Yes.
Probably like a 4.
4. Okay. Good amount of hatred.
An accident claimed her daughter's life. Her husband's life hangs in the balance, and Rue feels like she's losing her mind. A brand new psychological thriller from author Eve S. Evans. Available for pre-order today. As Rue tries to figure out how to be alone in the family home, strange noises, voices, and shadows reveal themselves to her. More questions bubble to the surface. Are Rue's daughters haunting her? If so, why? And why can't she remember what happened when they went off the bridge into the icy water below? Beneath the Water, a psychological thriller. Available on Amazon June 29, 2022, by author Eve S. Evans.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
These notes sponsored by guttingthesacredcow.com. Come on over, get a merch, some merch, hat, bags, merch,
cups, cell phone holders, you name it, and guttingthesacredcow at gmail.com if you want to advertise with us or just to stop by and say hi.
Going back real quick to that shot at the end when he's in the hospital and all his teammates are visiting, yeah. You can tell by the way Levinson framed that shot that he didn't have any intention in developing any of the other characters. Because if you watch that scene again, it's literally like a mid shot. And mostly what you see is Robert Redford laying in a hospital bed holding a newspaper. And then you just see like arms and torsos and shoulders of other baseball players. They don't even show their fucking face, dude.
Right.
It's like it could have just been cardboard cutouts playing the characters, like the supporting ball players.
Puppets. Notes. Roy Hobbs should have propped up his dead dad in that tree to see if the lightning strike could bring him back to life.
Oh, how dare you.
The whammer. Listen, you'd have to be fucking cross-eyed and with eight versions of Down syndrome to not know the parallel between him and Babe Ruth. There is zero subtlety in a million different ways of this film. Here's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, but here's the funny part. They didn't show the part where Whammer and Hobbs double team one of the Carney folk. Why? Harriet Byrd is Barbara Hershey's character. Harriet Byrd. So Byrd must be the word.
That's what they say.
Barbara Hershey's goal is to kill the best in the sport. So if she were alive today, LeBron James would be very safe.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Holy shit.
If only she were alive today, she would have saved me from at least three Tom Brady Super Bowls.
I've made money on all but one of those Super Bowls, except for, of course, the Eagles where I lost it. And, of course, with the Giants. Holy shit, it's Mr. Blue from Reservoir Dogs and the hitman who ate rat poison in Dumb and Dumber. We got ourselves a ball game here, kids. Also, he was in, oh God, the Kung Fu film with the black guy, Show Enough. What was that?
I never saw that one.
Oh, yes, you did. The black guy.
It's Show Enough?
No. He says Show Enough. Come on. It's a classically bad film. People still hold on that for. Google me right, Bill. You'll see. Just like 80s black guy. Bruce Leroy was the character's name.
I did not see this, but it's on my list now.
If Wilford Brimley and that cookie duster mustache went down on women who didn't shave their privates, he'd start a brush fire faster than any contestant did on Survivor. Have you ever seen Wilford Brimley and Andy Reid in the same room at the same time? Nope. Okay. Where the fuck would Robert Redford even get a second chance in baseball? I don't know if there was a Mexican league. I didn't research. There wasn't a Japanese league. I can promise you that because we introduced that to them early in the midst of World War II.
What? It takes 16 years to fucking recover from a gunshot wound. Like, what sense does that make?
I think the scandal had a part to do with it.
Adrian Peterson tore his ACL, was back in the field in 10 months, 9 months, actually.
Big Poppy got shot like five times and was fucking fine. Come on.
Do you think 50 Cent missed a show after being pumped up a full, like a 9 or 11 bullets, whatever it was? Nope. He was out there singing in the club and it's your birthday. Kim Basinger, fresh out of the box, brand new. Oh, she hits her stride for me in 9.5 weeks, and I think she hits her zenith in Batman. She was quite the national treasure then. She could still be in great, great GILF porn for me right now.
GILF.
Great, great GILF.
I was going to say GILF.
The baseball miscues in this film are over the top insane. A ton of my infamous, that doesn't happen. And of course, the cavalcade of miscues punctuated by the third baseman not paying attention and then getting hit squat in the nuts. Of all people not to pay attention, the second base is paying attention and the third base is paying attention. That doesn't happen. The cover getting hit off the ball. Just fucking stop.
Yeah.
What's next? Are these producers going to do a hockey film and have the puck explode next? Wonder Boy, which is also Bill Schultz's gay porn name. I can't wait for your MacArthurian return to that Coliseum of Cox, my friend. Can't wait to see it back in the field of play.
It does sound like a video the FBI found in Neverland after Michael Jackson died.
So Bum dies by running into a wall. Did Barry Levinson watch a ton of This Week in Baseball bloopers and said, I got it. I'll have a guy die while running through a wall. How about that?
Ugh, so bad.
Did he not see players running through walls for years and being okay? Or at least could they play the Benny Hill theme song while doing so? Here's a question for you two. What did Robert Redford have more of in this film? Home runs or facial warts?
That's bright, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Once you see him, I can't stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate movies. Sorry, you go.
I hate the same thing with Kirsten Dunst's wayward snaggletooth. I can't stop staring at that. It's making a hard right turn in her mouth, like a 90 degree angle.
That's why I like Jewel, though. You know, the girl, those girls with those mouths.
Blondes with big boobs, big check for me. Blondes with horrible teeth, back to square zero.
So you must. What do you do with Patricia Arquette then?
You put.
She's got both.
She tastes like a peach.
Robert Redford should not have pulled silver dollars from behind Kim Basinger ears. He should have pulled a condom from behind her ears and given a double eyebrow arch, like ha ha.
I think they're called sheepskin back then.
I can't see Robert Prosky playing any bad guys roles ever, especially after playing a lovable goofball bartender from The Great Outdoors. Thank God the days are gone where guys had to wear suits and straw hats to ball games. But of course, the flip side of the coin, we now have guys wearing camouflage hats and jerseys with their own name on the back of them. My biggest
pet
peeve. Yeah.
It costs more money than just buying like a fucking player jersey.
Hey, fellow Yankee fans, A, we don't have names in the back of our jerseys. And B, you're a quadruple jerk off for putting Costanza on the back of it. Thank you.
That's bad.
Okay. That's bad. Lack of subtlety. Number two, we get it. Glenn Close is an angel with the light shining around her. Barry Levinson. Barry Levinson must be Yiddish for heavy handed.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not buying Kim Basinger as James Garner's puppet. She's not conniving enough, but I bet Alec Baldwin spins a different yarn. Here's something that made me twice pause and go, that didn't happen, really. The Bat Boy gets to go on road trips with them? What? That doesn't happen?
Jesus. Oh, yeah.
That's straight. The kids on the train hanging out. Can you imagine if the Yankees Bat Boy followed Derek Jeter at his prime on road trips? That kid would have syphilis and gonorrhea by Memorial Day.
How about you don't even know the guy's name until they give him the fucking bat that says his name on it? I go, oh, his name must be Savoy then. Like, there's just no development of characters in this.
Or he just likes beer.
I'm like, I'm guessing his name is Savoy because it's on the dumb bat that he just gave him. But there's no like.
Looks like Kim Basinger has been plucked more than the Rose of Trey Lee, biggest whore in Fifth Avenue, I'm told.
How dare you?
I snuck a Caddyshack reference in there. A silver bullet in his stomach. What is he, a werewolf? Do we have to use a silver bullet? Wouldn't you kind of feel that? Or wouldn't you die of poisoning of some kind of that? Who was the doctor of that? Dr. Nick Rivera from The Simpsons couldn't see there was a fuck. When you get shot, don't they kind of try and see if they can find the bullet? That doesn't, that,
but also,
that doesn't happen.
But also, like, he went in for being poisoned and they cut open his stomach to see what was inside of it.
Right.
Like, what? You were poisoned. You just give him a fucking Epicat thing and he throws up, or you just give him a treatment. You don't like cut open his stomach to just see what's inside of it. That's like how you get rid of poison.
Like the tiger shark in Jaws where they empty out his belly contents.
And then he pulls out a perfect bullet. It's like the Kennedy bullet. They're like, there's no way that bullet went through a head and a shoulder and a wrist.
Back and to the left. Back and to the left.
I'm not going to sit here and watch that little silver bullet spill out all over the dock in front of all these good people.
That poor Kinter boy. Could do this all day. Could do it all day. The baseball scenes in this film are not good at all. The final scene is iconic, but not deserving of all the hoopla. But the other baseball scenes are nothing special, any way, shape, or form. Ironically, though, this was the first time I've ever seen a note passed to a ball player that didn't have a hotel number and lipstick print on it. How the hell did Robert Duvall know that he'd be taking late night batting practice?
Right. And he shows up with a fucking camera.
He's in this stadium that's locked down at night. And it just so happens, here comes fucking Hobbs. Shut up. And now Roy Hobbs, who's been in the hospital now for a period of time, is able to perfectly aim a ball. By the way, if you watched launch angle like I did, that was a foul ball by a mile. But of course, it comes off the bat and almost hits Robert Duvall. Not once, but twice. A guy who's been off his feet and off swinging for a week is able to perfectly place it like the goddamn Black Widow pool shark herself, Jeanette Lee. Get the fuck out. That doesn't happen. Speaking of more of that doesn't happen, let's add shattering the press box window to our list of exaggerated horseshit moments. Now, I was at Aaron Judge's first game where he hit a home run. It went off the Mohegan Sun windows in center field, and guess what? Nary a scratch. This ball was fouled backward at a maximum rate of 75 miles an hour, but it's Redford at a buck 75, but not Aaron Judge, who's 275, but he pierces the glass with that foul ball. Blow me.
And not only that, it's like while he's writing an angry cartoon about him, like it's just so fucking dumb. It's just, you see that moment, you're like, that's dumb. Like, that's not cool. That's not funny. It's just dumb.
Right. So the kid gives him his bat, which apparently happens to be Major League Baseball regulated because they tested his bat. And of course, it's laying in front of him in the on-deck circle or wherever they had all the bats. And of course, he smashes the game-winning home run with that bat with that same lightning bolt. Oh, vomit. By the way, I didn't know this. I'm no chemistry major or any kind of electrical engineer. I didn't know if you shoot one light bulb out, the entire stadium's lighting system explodes. I have seen less sparks at a Motley Crue concert while standing at a bunch of iron workers welding. Are you kidding me? And everyone's frolicking around the field. They'd be ducking their head to not get any embers in their eyes. But no, it's like it's like Whitesnake videos being filmed out in right center field. Shut up. This movie has way too many over-the-top scenes. This is more of a fairy tale than a baseball movie.
Right?
This is. I completely agree with your Hallmark movie assessment. That's spot on. And I get it. This is going to be hypocritical for me to say, as I said before, I love Field of Dreams, and it has ghosts as a main theme. But it's not like the ghosts come in and grab the ball midair or shake the bats or de-pants the batter on the box. It's a theme. They just let it go. This film keeps bashing you over your head with a bunch of bullshit that doesn't happen moments in sports. And I will tally away a bandwagon myself. Bandwagon. I'm going to jump aboard your bandwagon. The character development is piss poor. The secondary character should know none of them. Any of the teammates' name. That's shocking. The story is okay. It's okay. I would have preferred a little backstory about how he got shot, but they wanted to keep that under wraps, keep it mysterious. But the that doesn't happen moments completely take me out of this film. The baseball scenes, I said before, are piss poor. I don't hate this film, but this gloriously fails the remote test. Remote test, of course, if you stumble upon it at any point while watching on cable, do you drop the remote and continue watching? No chance. I own this because I bought it for $5 a while ago. Oh, that's cool. The Natural for $5. I'm never going to watch this again. This is not even my top 10 baseball film list. Major League, Field of Dreams, Eight Men Out, Cobb, Little Big League. Cobb is excellent. You're so wrong. It's so good. Little Big League, The Rookie. Yeah, because at least it's true to form. 42, Sandlot, 61, and For Love of the Game in no particular order. That's the Vibano. And my score, boy, Nick Whitmer, you and I are simpatico because I actually did something that I don't often do. Bill Schultz, you know what's going to come next. I dropped my score for this for now because your argument, 4.5 out of 10 from a five. Never let, by the way, and I saw this as a kid and I wasn't impressed. I go, hits a bat with a lightning bolt, breaks a light, cool. What about the rest of it? Not much. As a kid, I said that, so. I will stand firmly in that camp.
Good
Bill Schultz,
you.
Thank you, sir. Bill Schultz, the floor is yours, pal.
Well, this will not shock you guys that when we're talking about The Natural, it all comes back to Chicago. The character of Roy Hobbs was based on two people, Eddie Wenkus, was a real Chicago Cub that got shot by his stalker because he made the cardinal sin of being traded to the Phillies. Comes back to play in Wrigley Field. She sends him a note. He goes into her hotel room. He doesn't know who she is. She shoots him with a rifle. And then, unlike Barbara Hershey, she continues to live until she's 83, never even went to jail. Eddie never really pressed charges. She went to a mental thing. And then, of course, the other Chicagoan that this character is based on, Shoeless Joe Jackson. So much is it based on Shoeless Joe Jackson, with the gambling and the taking and what have you. In the novel, of course, Roy Hobbs strikes out. And a kid actually says in the novel, "Say it ain't so, Roy. Say it ain't so." That is where the arguments about reality or that doesn't happen end. You guys, it's not like a fairy tale. This is a fairy tale. And it strikes me as very interesting that you both love Field of Dreams. And yet you're also in the same sentence as you kind of touched on, Kev, criticizing this movie for all of the over the top. This whole thing is based on a Arthurian legend from Pop Fisher, who is the Fisher King, right on up to Roy Hobbs, who is King Arthur himself, Sir Percival a little bit, but it's basically based on that legend, the women as well. The symbolism is, as you mentioned, over the goddamn top. I remember watching as a kid and thinking my dad was a genius for showing me that all the good people were in white and all the bad people were in black. I thought dad was a genius. Then I got to about seven and I realized, oh, anyone can see that. But the actual unspoken symbolism in this movie is, I think we'll call them pinks, P-I-N-X, Pussy Jinx or Unlucky Fuckies. And it's really what a vagina can do to an otherwise pure soul like Roy Hobbs. He wasn't that pure in the book. Whether it be Kim Basinger or Barbara Hershey versus Magical Wood. And it wasn't just Wonder Boy. And it wasn't just Savoy Special. It was that goddamn wall made of wood that immediately killed Bump, who was a bump on Roy's log. The wood is the real winner in this movie. The other issue, of course, is age. We discussed when we destroyed Superman, the movie, how stupid it was for them to cast a younger Christopher Reeve when Christopher Reeve was like 27 at the time. And everybody played an 18-year-old who was 27 then anyway. And they cast it with a guy that was a year younger than Christopher Reeves. And he was just skinnier. And that was it. That didn't work. In this movie, it was so stupid to cast Robert Redford as both an 18-year-old, and boy, they were pushing it, when then all of a sudden he was 35, when he was 47. That is why the light is so soft throughout the movie, but particularly in the early scenes. And the light versus dark is throughout. And that is a theme, except from the beginning, when Glenn Close and Robert Redford, both of whom are way too old to be playing who they're playing at 18, respectively, are basically shot in a closet with a screen over it in every scene because they didn't have the CGI that so helps DH Marvel characters. And apparently Indiana Jones in the next one that I will not see. I'll probably see it. That age thing always struck me as interesting. Wilford Brimley being not 2 years older than Robert Redford at that movie. Both of them being about 2 years older than me right now is gut punching. But Wilford Brimley in and of himself and that age is still always a mind blower. But the movie is indeed a fairy tale. And all of these illogical things that happen, all of these things that you say would never happen, that's valid if we were to talk about a Bull Durham, if we were to talk about an 8-man out. Hell, even Major League bowed to a lot of the realisms of baseball. But this is a fairy tale. God bless Ray Liotta. R.I.P. Ray Liotta. A great quote he once said is that he always felt bad, getting back to Shoeless Joe, that he never learned how to bat left-handed because that's what Shoeless Joe did. And a lot of fans would come up to him and say, "I love Field of Dreams, but I can't believe that you didn't learn how to bat left-handed." And he would finally tell them, he's like, "Yeah, I know Shoeless Joe was left-handed or wasn't right-handed, but he also wasn't a ghost that came back on a cornfield in Iowa." That is the kind of arguments you guys are giving me. And well done, Ray Liotta, for seeing the forest with the magical wood for the trees. Casting wise, even though it was the Whammer, but again, fairy tale, many people far more brilliant than me, Bob Costas being one of them, I still maintain he's one of the best interviewers that ever lived, said that that is the best cast of Babe Ruth ever. I am one to agree. I don't have his name in front of me, but he
Joe was, Don Baker, also in some of the Bond films. You're welcome.
Yes, absolutely. Darren McGavin as Gus was great.
Wasn't he also the dad in Gremlins?
Yes. Wait a second, though. If he was, he aged horribly between that and a year later Gremlins, but you might be right. No.
Keep talking. I'll look up.
While the ending was made for Hollywood, of course, because I guess in the book, Roy Hobbs does strike out, although giving back the money that he did take, much like Shoeless Joe, he also had sex with Glenn Close, who in the book was his grandmother, and she still got pregnant. It's a fucked up book, boys. All of those changes were for the...
Glenn Close's character is supposed to be his grandmother?
Grandmother, and he doesn't meet her until later. She's the lady in red in the book.
So he fucks her, and then their kid is...
Yes.
His
Yeah, also part of Arthurian legend a little bit. There's always a lot of incest in those things. Indeed. And yet he's still... All of these changes made this movie not only one of the better sports movies, if you can call it that, it might be more of a fairy tale ever made, but also one of those rare movies that is far better than the book, as hard-hitting and edgy as the book, I suppose, is. Let us not discount Randy Newman's unbelievable score. Gentlemen, I ask you, hum me another classic baseball soundtrack theme song other than The Natural.
Naked Gun, I Love L.A.
Not a baseball movie.
Oh, well, maybe.
Had a great baseball couple scenes. Yeah. Now, I love the soundtrack to Field of Dreams. Go ahead and hum it. I'm waiting.
Ding, 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 ding.
That sounds like Close Encounters. Yes.
I do have the track from Field of Dreams on my iTunes. So
a soundtrack can make the movie, and this one certainly did.
I cannot disagree with you anymore. This is so you know it when you hear it, but you're not like, again, everyone knows Axel F and loves it. Everyone maybe people have it on their phone. No one has this fucking Natural theme in their phone except maybe you.
I will refuse to comment on that one way or the other. I actually thought that there were a lot of great points made. I never even really thought about the fact that the team is so unbelievably underdeveloped that you don't know or care about any of them. I will say that you do see his son sitting right next to Glenn Close and her bringing him on in towards the end. It also establishes the fact that Roy Hobbs is, while a good person, no character arc there from beginning till end. He's dumb as fuck. I mean, she essentially... piecemeal gives him the fact that he is her father when they first meet up in Chicago. So much so saying that his father lives in New York and he's doesn't do the math because he can't do math. That was a little ridiculous. The character development of the team, yes, was very shoddy. The pitcher situation as well. But guys, again, it's Arthurian legend with a little bit of Greek mythology in it and some Christian symbology as far as the wound on the side is concerned. This is less a sports movie, much more a fairy tale, as is your beloved Field of Dreams. And if anything, the more I think about this gorgeous movie, the more I love it more. But then again, I'm a little biased.
I knew that was coming. I was waiting for the hat to come out.
It is a cool hat. I'll give you that. But
oh, it's a great hat. I've been flannels, if you're interested.
I'll give you this though. To your suspension of reality and Field of Dreams is just you have to believe that ghosts exist. That's it. With the Natural, you have to believe the 15 ludicrous things.
That's my
point. It's like to me, like the Field of Dreams is more believable than the Natural. But yeah, I mean, good points about symbolism and fairy tale and stuff. My argument with that would just be that I think symbolism and those things should be like, it shouldn't be so heavy-handed in the sense of like, it shouldn't be so literal. It should just be something that's kind of after the fact that you can talk about.
Very heavy-handed, yes. But the other thing I'd say too is the only thing that movie forced me to have to believe was that everything I've done wrong in my life was because of pussy. And I can go and believe that. That is not That's too fair. Hard of a fairy tale to do. Or pinxes right. and or unlucky fuckies.
It's like the movie itself and story should stand on its own aside from the symbolism. Like there are people who claim that there will be blood is like a metaphor for the war in Iraq. But you don't have to know that to love that movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas like this one is just it's just so like on the nose if that's what they're going for.
Well, Bill, and the other heavy handed thing in the book, too, is the whole Arthurian legend, New York Knights. Here's one thing I've never been able to confirm. And I read the book so long ago. And again, it's not that great. Very lauded, but not that great. But the one thing I've never been able to confirm within the book or certainly in the movie. Okay, so yeah, Arthurian legend, sure. But you would assume this is the fourth baseball team in New York, right? You got your Dodgers, you got your Giants, you got your Yankees, and then the Knights. You would assume New York Knights, they're in Queens. But I've never been able to confirm that. And I don't know if anyone thought ahead to actually establish that. So right. there's another notch against some of the wealth, otherwise well thought out things in the movie. Give it me should be in Queens.
Give me a number.
Queens Knights.
Give me a number.
Nine.
Oh, nine. Jesus Christ.
What am I wearing? What am I wearing? I've wasted too much money to go back at this point, guys. Too much money.
Nine.
Oh, wait, I got another hat. This one's the patch.
My God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and by the way, look at this on the t-shirt. This is my favorite part of the t-shirt. See.
God.
I'm a virgin.
I was just going to say, Nick, do you see the pussy stampeding behind him?
I don't know what it's like to kiss a woman.
Definitely a man. Oh, but hey, you enjoy you. Let's see what
I am who I am.
Let's see, and I love you for that. And let's see what these blowhard douche nozzles have to say about these reviews. Critics, 5-star reviews.
Critics, 5-star reviews. Critics, 5-star reviews. Critics, 5-star reviews. Critics, 5-star reviews.
Barry Levinson's The Natural is a sports drama that gives me a pleasant time for 2 hours that roll like a pitcher's fastball in the postseason. Guess what? This nerd doesn't watch baseball but wanted to make a joke, but we see right through you, buddy.
Yeah.
Nope.
Fastballs go faster in the postseason.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Especially a 90-mile-an-hour one. He even gives you the mileage it's going, dude. Yeah. Like,
by the way, I haven't read the rule book, but when you knock the cover off a ball, that's a ground rule double.
Yes.
Yeah, he didn't make it home on that one.
When The Natural opened in 1984, I thought it was the best baseball movie ever made. 36 years later, and after countless Bull Durham reruns, which I think is overrated.
Well, Bull Durham's great.
I find it falls far short of the original designation, but it's still got merit. Robert Redford is at his best as a middle-aged rookie Roy Hobbs, but Wilford Brimley all but steals the show as crusty but laconic skipper Pop Fish. Lou Brown is the best baseball manager in any fucking sporting film, period.
Pardon my ignorance. That's the Major League one, right?
Major League, of course.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, he was amazing. Yeah.
Come on, Dorn. Get in front of the damn ball. Don't give me that Olé bullshit.
Means we got to win the whole damn thing.
It's all
so good.
And the Yankees were the bad guys.
Of course. It's all very corny, but they sucked in the 80s, so there was no need for that. It's all very corny and much of it's almost over alarmingly overbaked, yet it works.
Oh.
Critics, 1-star reviews.
Critics, 1-star reviews. Critics, 1-star reviews.
The scouting report on The Natural has lots to read, lots of tools, but no heart. Finally, a critic that makes a relevant baseball joke.
Yeah. Okay.
The script is one shockingly drab line after another, and nothing into the expensive 1930s period design can cover up the shabbiness of the movie making. Robert Redford isn't playing a 1930s baseball hero. He's playing an instrument of God. No. Ugh.
The message is baseball is purely and simply a matter of divine intervention. At about the 130-minute mark, I got the idea that God's only begotten son was playing right field for the New York team. What? Jammed with cliches, the natural never misses a chance to manipulate the audience. Into what?
I was going to say, yeah, I like they're
cliches. I'm with you. What are we being manipulated
their
into?
Their magic lightning bat dogma. I wanted to follow that.
The saccharine-esque feelings.
Yeah.
Amazon 5-star reviews.
Amazon 5-star reviews.
There is a certain demographic that, thanks to today's identity politics, may have more difficulty finding good stories like this to which they can relate. This film may be particularly inspirational to people who feel like their lives didn't turn out the way they had hoped and have trouble seeing the silver lining. I wouldn't be surprised if this film is eventually rebooted at some point with countless revisions to make it conform to the political ideology rampant in today's Hollywood. But this is one of the main reasons that I find myself going back to watch these films that I love one more time before they get ruined or become difficult to find in their original form.
That's basically like trying to tell you that he hates queers, but like he doesn't want to say that. You know what? What is that? What is he saying, dude?
In the reboot, there's gonna be a gay second baseman.
Yeah.
Turn two. Don't mind if I do. An inspiring story of lost dreams, redemption in a pursuit of a dream, and finding something you never knew you lost. A classic in the vein of Field of Dreams, of Warm Summer Days, Lemonade, and watching or listening to America's favorite pastime with the now mostly forgotten legends of days gone by. Is someone sitting with their feet and their toes in the waters of Lake Wobegon?
Casey Kasem should have read that.
Yeah. This little girl lost her dog at the age of 12. Here's number 47, Salt and Peppers, Push It.
Well, if Lake Wobegon was a fantastic strain of weed, that comment that he made would have been made sense.
Great name for a gay bar, too, by the way, since we're on the theme.
Oh, yeah. Blobegon.
I don't care for baseball, never have. Truth be told, I would rather watch a meaningless preseason football game than Game 7 of the World Series. Stop it. I've even tried watching in person, but the game still feels about as dull as watching grass grow. That said, it is ironic that this is my all-time favorite sports movie. Guess who's not taking this asshole seriously?
Yeah, right?
Me and you, Nick.
And I think there is an argument to be made that obviously it has to be put in the sports movie category because it's about baseball, but there is an argument to be made that it isn't a sports movie.
So
in
was,
a weird way, well, yeah.
Is The Rookie with Brendan Fraser still a sports movie?
I never saw that because Yankees
it's terrible.
And Brendan Fraser. Yeah,
he's in Japan for 80% of the film. I don't know why you're Yankee hatred.
Did they real quick? I we touched on it before, but did they ever explain why he was a right fielder, not a pitcher, when you're led to believe he was a pitcher? Was that in the book?
It's a great question, and that pissed me off. And it's not in the book, and he could have been
easy
Ohtani, you know?
It's an easy answer. How many, besides Nolan Ryan or Phil Niekro, who threw a spitter, how many 40-some-year-old pitchers are there out there?
But that's the thing, though. He pitches in BP, and they're like, he throws the ball through the net, and they're like, oh, my God, this guy can pitch, too. Like,
yeah.
And Nick, to your point, you know who the real natural is Robert Duvall. Okay, this guy is such a renaissance sports journalist. He is a writer, a sports photographer, and the best sports cartoonist that ever lived. Now, having said all that, he didn't put two and two that Roy was that pitcher until Roy at 82 pitches the ball that goes right through the net. And then all of a sudden he's like, stupid. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that part, even though you don't need logic in this movie, that part was really pushing it. Yeah.
Eat shit, Bill Gallo. That's what I've learned from that last segment. The nice cut.
Daily News, right? Not the Post, is Bill Gallo.
I believe so.
I think it's Daily News, yeah.
Amazon. I'm sorry, I missed one. I am an avid baseball fan, and I watched this movie when I was 8 years old. After that day, I never wore another number but 9. Even if I had to trade, bargain, or trick someone, I always wore that number. When you watch this movie, all that you could do is dream that you could.
That's the thing I'm pissed off about at Ebbets Flannels. Otherwise, I'm giving them free plugs, and hopefully they'll be an advertiser for you soon. As far as my t-shirt is concerned, there's no nine on the back. I got the lightning bolt, but I don't have the nine. Where's the nine?
Well, you're pretty angry.
I am. This costs a lot of money.
Amazon one-star reviews. Amazon one-star reviews. Here come the Amazon one-star reviews. Can I give Amazon a zero for this? Glenn Close sounds like someone transgendered, and Robert Redford sounds like gosh knows what. I had to turn on close captions to determine what they were even saying. 0 stars to Amazon. Sign RuPaul. Next one. The fielding, in quotes, portrayed in this movie is horribly unrealistic and closer to Angels in the Outfield.
Unrealistic.
And closer to Angels in the Outfield than a movie that I can take seriously, like 42. Not sure why people think this is a good movie.
Ugh.
Same.
Terrible.
Best. Terrible. Ready for this one? Best sports classic movie ever.
No.
Well, the ironic part
is it's an oddly worded sentence to begin with.
Well, no, yeah. These are the Amazon one stars, but they had that to write.
Ah, okay.
Hence why I put it there. Next one, very little baseball, kind of a dull story. Many great baseball movies out there, and this isn't one of them. Next one, watch it when I was young, hated it. Watch it as an adult and still hate it. Sorry, give me Major League or Eight Men Out or Bingo Long any day over this movie.
That was the Billy Dee Williams and James Earl Jones movie. I never saw that. I don't know if it's either. Good or not. Yeah.
Number one, Redford is way too old for this role. Ditto Glenn Close and not nearly attractive enough. Number two. Number three, how did Roy go from being a prodigy of a pitcher as a teen to being a prodigious power hitter later? Number four, the mythical hits by Roy are ludicrous. How in the heck can you foul tip harder than anybody else so it shatters a press box window? Thank you.
He answered his own question. The mythical hits. Come on.
And the climactic homer near the end. What's with the broken lights raining sparks for what it seems like 10 minutes? Not to mention the fact the sparks shower down in the base pass, which are 300 feet away from the lights. Number five, the homer.
I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt, but this is the equivalent of watching Star Wars and being like, you can't have explosions in space. That is literally the equivalent of this.
But no. Star Wars and The Matrix set their own rules in its own separate universe of being science fiction.
This is a separate universe.
No, it isn't. This is a fucking baseball movie. You're not supposed to have shit blown up.
There's
also not a lot of other things in baseball films. There's not also the the Texans in Any Given Sunday. I forgot their team name.
Oh, all of them, man.
I love
NFL
it.
By the way, that one.
One of the things I'll say about this movie to compliment it, the one thing I liked about this movie is that it was the last time that the Pittsburgh Pirates looked good in any capacity.
What do you mean, 1989, 1990, the Killer Bees? You weren't excited about that?
Yeah.
Wasn't in the book that they were playing the Pittsburgh, but they said that was the movie maker's revenge for Mazeroski's home run.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So someone's a Yankee fan then. Yeah. Okay. Number five, the home run music was just okay. Just okay. Not so great it has to be used over and over ad nauseum. At half the ballparks in the country. Very, very mediocre film at best. And again, I just don't understand why people rave about it. That's the final review. Bill Schultz, did Nick Whitmer gut the sacred cow?
Okay, this is one of my all-timers. I love it. I still get chills, and I have literally seen it. I hate saying the word literally. Got to get that out of my vocabulary.
That's because you weigh 140 pounds, and you get chills a lot, and you're going through withdrawals from alcohol.
I hate you. but I will still obviously clearly always love it. But I have to tell you, Nick made some points that as many times as I've seen it, I've never really thought about. And so even though I still consider this a cherished movie, I will grudgingly say that in some brief, shining way, he gutted it a little bit. So, yes.
I'll take it.
I disagree. I say he fully gutted this fucker.
You're not going to get that out of me.
I didn't expect to. But I completely agree. Nick, you're right. As soon as you chose this, I knew where Bill stands because I've been to his house and seen his collection.
Oh, yeah. He's wept for me.
I did. But I never liked this as a kid. I go, all right, it's not bad. But there are too many overbearing flaws in my book to say this is a classic. I can't deal with this. I agree. Nick Whitmer, you've been a blast. Tell everybody again what you're up to and where we can find you.
My special's coming out most likely in July. I'm still getting the final dates from the people, but just follow me on Instagram and you'll get all that information at Nick_Whitmer. You can also go to thenickwhitmer.com. All that stuff's on there as well. So keep an eye out for that. If you listen to Stand Up in the Car, get my album. It's pretty much everywhere where you can get music. Nick Whitmer, it's called Always Hungry. Get it.
Bill Schultz, ruin the rest of the show for us.
I'm at Bill Schultz on Twitter. Again, I don't really do the Instagram thing. Please check out Joanne Nosachinsky and I on compoundmedia.com. The subscription is so cheap, you can't afford not to do it. We are 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 1 p.m. Monday through Thursday. Nick, we'd love to have you on. We can exchange afterwards. Yeah. Absolutely. And while my lack of a tooth is disgusting, Joanne is a lot of fun to look at. So you have that. Yeah, yeah.
I'll be looking at her in less than 4 minutes as I
cannot wait to hear about the Exorcist thing.
Yeah.
And I get to hear she's just now seen it. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Yeah.
KevinGoatee.com for all my shenanigans and tomfoolery. Look for us in the metaverse with this very fine show, as well as possibly other shows in the near future of mine that you've known to come and love. GuttingTheSacredCow.com, GuttingTheSacredCow@gmail.com. And God damn it, if you haven't written a 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review about this very fine podcast and your platform of choice, shame on you. But like Jesus says, there's always time for redemption. And unlike the Penguins goalies, we can offer saves too.
Motherfucker.
if you have not done a 5-star review, you are fucking Barbara Hershey.
Oh, my right? Lord. Yeah. That we can all agree on. That we can all agree on. Kevin Goatee, special guest, Bill Schultz. Thanks, pal. It's a joy when you hang on. And Nick Whitmer, my pal, congrats on the album. That's dope. I have it. I bought it, as I said, as I posted and screenshot to you just to prove it. Thank you for coming on our very podcast. Hey.
Thank you guys for having me. It's so much fun. And you guys have a really good thing going here. It's really good.
Oh, thank you, sir. Great idea. Appreciate it. All right, everyone. Take care.
Later.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.